This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Life in Kansas City, especially in my small neighborhood, is pretty much a synonym for boring. Don't get me wrong, I love my family and the few friends I have here, but excitement, adventure, those words felt like they belonged in another universe. That's me, by the way, Alex, a 19-year-old who dreams big but lives in a world that's way too small. My life's highlight reel includes reading about cryptids and monsters. You know, creatures that people swear they've seen but nobody can ever prove exist. Wendigos, dogmen, you name it. I've read about them all. I've always wanted to see something like that. To have my own story to tell. I figured it would never happen, though. Stuff like that doesn't happen to people like me. Or so I thought. Most of my evenings are pretty routine. I come home from work, grab some dinner, and then it's straight to my room. My sanctuary. It's where I draw, losing myself in sketches of fantasy creatures and landscapes that I wish I could visit. My phone's always within reach, buzzing with texts from my friends. We share memes, joke around, and sometimes they'll listen to me ramble about the latest cryptid story I've stumbled across online. This one particular night, though, as I was sketching a particularly menacing-looking creature that I imagined roamed the dense forests of some far-off land, my mom's voice pierced through my concentration. "Alex, don't forget to take out the trash. It's garbage day tomorrow." I sighed, looking out the window at the dark, cold night. "Yeah, I'll do it in a bit," I called back, not moving an inch. The thing is, we have this big family, which means a lot of trash, and I was not looking forward to hauling 5 cans to the end of the driveway in the freezing cold. Eventually, though, duty called. Or rather, the thought of my mom nagging me until I did it was motivation enough. I put on my jacket, bracing myself for the chill, and headed downstairs. It was around 11:30 p.m. by then, the house quiet except for the sound of my dog, Scout, who seemed to be the only other awake soul. Scout's a good girl, always keeping watch over the house. She has 2 beds, one in the dining room and another by the front door. As I walked downstairs, I noticed her by the door, her nose pressed against the window, staring intently at something outside. I didn't think much of it. Probably a raccoon, I figured. We have this one that likes to rummage through our trash, and Scout's always been too interested in it. Shrugging it off, I grabbed the first trash can and dragged it outside. The air was colder than I expected, biting at my skin as I made my way down the driveway. The sound of my footsteps and the dragging of the trash can were the only sounds in the otherwise silent night. I was about to grab the 3rd can when I heard it, a strange scrabbling noise that seemed to come from the big oak tree at the front of our yard. Curiosity piqued. I paused, listening. The sound was odd, like something big was climbing down the tree. It wasn't the quick, light movements of a raccoon. This was heavier, deliberate. I turned, trying to peer through the darkness, and that's when I saw it. A figure, human-sized but impossibly thin, peeking out from behind the tree. For a moment, I just stood there, my heart racing. This was it, wasn't it? The encounter I'd always wanted. But as quickly as that excitement came, it was replaced by a chill that had nothing to do with the night air. Something about this figure felt off, wrong even. And then, in the blink of an eye, it was gone. I rushed back inside, my mind racing. What had I just seen? Was it really something supernatural, or was my imagination getting the better of me? Either way, one thing was clear. My life had just gotten a lot more interesting. After the weird encounter with that thing, I couldn't shake off the feeling that my boring life had just taken a turn for the creepy. Scout, my trusty sidekick, seemed to sense it too. She hadn't moved from her spot by the window, her eyes still fixed on the spot where the figure had disappeared. I tried to tell myself it was nothing, just some weird trick of the light, or maybe my imagination running wild. But deep down, I knew it wasn't. Dragging the rest of the trash cans out felt like the longest walk of my life. Every little noise made me jump, and I kept glancing over my shoulder, half expecting to see that figure again. It was stupid, I told myself. There's a logical explanation for everything, right? Right. The cold seemed to bite even harder as I made my way back to the house, the last trash can in tow. That's when I heard it. A scrabbling noise, like before, but closer this time. My heart skipped a beat. I froze, listening. It sounded like something was climbing down the tree again, but this time, it was followed by a soft thud, as if whatever it was had landed on the ground. I turned slowly, my phone's flashlight trembling in my hand, and there it was. The figure from before, but now it was closer, standing at the edge of the driveway, barely hidden by the shadows. It was tall and impossibly thin, its eyes reflecting the light from my phone like some wild animal. "Hey," I called out, my voice shaking more than I'd like to admit. "Who are you? What do you want?" But it just stood there, silent, watching me. I took a step forward, my curiosity battling with my fear. That's when I noticed it, the way it seemed to sway slightly, as if it was struggling to stand. And its eyes. They weren't human. They were too big, too bright. I blinked, and in that instant, it was gone. Vanished into the night without a sound. I ran to where it had been standing, but there was nothing there. No footprints, no sign that anyone or anything had been there. Just the cold, hard ground. I raced back inside, locking the door behind me. My heart was pounding and my mind was racing. What had I just seen? Was it a ghost? A monster? Or was I just losing my mind? Scout was still by the door, her tail wagging as if to ask, "What happened?" I wished I could tell her. I wished I could explain what I had seen, but I couldn't. All I knew was that something was out there, something I couldn't explain. As I lay in bed that night, staring at the ceiling, I couldn't help but feel like my life had changed. I had wanted an adventure, something to break the monotony of my everyday life. But now that it had happened, I wasn't so sure. The world felt bigger, darker, filled with things I couldn't understand. And I couldn't shake the feeling that my encounter with the shadowy figure was just the beginning. The morning after my eerie encounter, I found myself scrolling through my phone, not really looking at anything. My mind was elsewhere, replaying last night's events over and over. I had barely slept, my dreams filled with shadows and strange lurking figures. Scout seemed to sense my unease, sticking close to me as if she could ward off any supernatural threats with her presence alone. I decided to do something about my swirling thoughts. If I couldn't get answers in the real world, maybe, just maybe, the internet could help. I started off by searching for anything related to supernatural sightings in Kansas City. Nothing. Then, I widened my search to include cryptids, supernatural beings, and anything remotely linked to what I saw. That's when I stumbled upon forums filled with people like me, people who had experienced the unexplainable, the eerie, and the downright terrifying. I pored over posts about the Rake, Skinwalkers, and Hidebehinds. The more I read, the more I felt a strange sense of belonging. These were my people. They wouldn't laugh at my story. They would listen and maybe offer some insight. Gathering my courage, I decided to share my encounter. I described the figure, its eerie silence, and its sudden disappearance. I talked about Scout's reaction and how everything felt off that night. Then, I hit send. The relief was immediate, like I had shared a burden with strangers who understood. Replies started trickling in. Some offered words of comfort, telling me I wasn't alone. Others shared their theories. A few mentioned the Hide Behind, a creature I hadn't thought much about until now. According to legend, it was a being that could conceal itself behind any object, no matter how small. It was said to prey on humans, using its ability to remain unseen until it was too late. The more I read, the more the pieces seemed to fit. The way the figure had disappeared, how it seemed to blend into the shadows. It matched the descriptions of the Hide Behind almost too well. But with every theory that seemed to fit, a thousand doubts would follow. Was I just seeing what I wanted to see? Was my love for the supernatural clouding my judgment? I spent the entire day lost in thought, jumping at shadows and second-guessing every creak and groan of our old house. That night, I couldn't face the thought of being alone in my room, so I camped out in the living room with Scout. She seemed happy with the arrangement, snuggling up to me as if she could protect me from whatever lurked in the darkness. As I lay there, staring at the ceiling, I realized something. My encounter, as frightening as it was, had awakened something in me. A curiosity, a need to know more about the world and its hidden corners. I no longer wanted to be a passive observer in my own life. I wanted to explore, to seek out the mysteries of the world and uncover the truth. My thoughts drifted to the woods near our house, a place I had always avoided at night. But now, it called to me, whispering secrets in the wind. I knew what I had to do. I needed to go back, to face my fears and find out once and for all what had visited me that night. As I drifted off to sleep, a plan began to form in my mind. Tomorrow, I would start my investigation. I would go into the woods, and this time, I would not be afraid. The sun was setting, casting long shadows that danced across my bedroom walls. I stood there, backpack slung over one shoulder, filled with everything I thought I might need. Flashlight, extra batteries, my sketchbook, and of course, my phone. Scout watched me with her head tilted, as if questioning my sanity. Maybe she was right to wonder. After all, I was about to venture into the woods at dusk, chasing after something that might not even exist. I could feel the adrenaline pumping through my veins, a mix of fear and excitement. This was it. The moment where I would either prove to myself that I wasn't crazy or... well, I wasn't sure what the alternative was. I just knew I had to find out what was out there. "Come on, Scout," I said, my voice more confident than I felt. She bounded up to me, ready for whatever adventure lay ahead. Together, we stepped out the door, the familiar comfort of home giving way to the unknown. The woods were different at night. Sounds were amplified. A twig snapping underfoot sounded like a gunshot, and the rustle of leaves in the wind sent shivers down my spine. I kept my flashlight trained in front of me, half expecting to see the figure from the other night appear at any moment. But there was nothing, just the darkness and the occasional curious gaze of a deer caught in the light. As we ventured deeper into the woods, I couldn't help but feel a little foolish. What was I expecting to find? Ghosts? Monsters? The rational part of my brain told me I was on a wild goose chase, but something else, something deeper, urged me on. We reached the spot where I thought I had seen the figure. I shone my flashlight around, inspecting every tree, every shadow. But there was nothing out of the ordinary, just an empty patch of forest that looked like every other part. Disappointment washed over me. Had I really let my imagination get the best of me? I sat down on a fallen log, Scout settling beside me, her warm body a small comfort in the cool night air. That's when I heard it. A sound that wasn't just the wind or a nocturnal animal going about its business. It was a soft, scrabbling noise, like something or someone moving through the underbrush. My heart leaped into my throat. I grabbed my flashlight and stood up, ready to face whatever was out there. But as quickly as the sound had come, it vanished. I stood in silence, listening hard, but there was nothing. Just the quiet of the woods and the beating of my own heart. I realized then that the answer I was looking for might not be as straightforward as I had hoped. Maybe some mysteries weren't meant to be solved. Maybe the thrill was in the search. The endless quest for understanding in a world filled with unknowns. As we made our way back home, I felt a sense of peace settle over me. I might not have found the creature from that night, but I had found something else. Courage. The courage to face the unknown, to step into the darkness and not be afraid of what might be lurking there. And so, my quest continues, not just for the truth about that night, but for the many mysteries that lie waiting in the shadows. With Scout by my side, I'm ready for whatever comes next. The adventure, it seems, is just beginning.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The idea of one last hurrah before the inevitable splintering of paths to different colleges seemed not just appealing, but necessary. The Pacific Crest Trail, with its promise of untamed wilderness and nights under the stars, was the perfect backdrop for our final adventure together. Dan, my boyfriend of 2 years, was the architect of this trip. His excitement contagious as he picked me up early in the morning. His Jeep was packed to the brim, a testament to his thorough preparation, or perhaps just his inability to pack light. "You're going to love it," Dan promised as we drove, the landscape blurring past us. His description of the trail painted pictures of endless green canopies and crisp mountain air, a world away from the suburban monotony we were eager to escape. "It's us against nature out there, but babe, I think nature might have a bone to pick with us considering the amount of alcohol we're bringing along." I laughed, glancing at the cooler that was indeed filled to the brim with an assortment of drinks. "What about this?" Dan said, pulling out a sandwich-sized Ziploc bag filled with weed. "I'm sure Mother Nature won't mind this. It's her creation, after all." Snatching the bag from him, I couldn't help but admire the quality. "Been holding out on me, huh?" I teased, the familiar scent filling the car. The drive to the trail felt both eternal and fleeting, conversations flowing as smoothly as the road beneath us. When we arrived at the Bridge of the Gods, the sight took my breath away. It was a majestic structure, serving as a threshold between the mundane and the magical. We crossed it with a mix of reverence and caution, aware that we were sharing this narrow path with larger, more menacing vehicles. The hike to our campsite was uneventful, yet every step filled me with a growing sense of freedom. We settled by the river, the perfect spot as dictated by some unspoken agreement among us. Nick, his girlfriend Tessa, the inseparable twins Sadie and Katie, Dan and I, three tents for six people, our makeshift homes for the next few days. As the sun dipped below the jagged mountains, painting the sky in shades of orange and purple, we gathered around the fire that Nick and Dan had started. The alcohol did flow, easing us into a state of nostalgic reminiscence about high school antics and whispered confessions of our hopes for the future. Dan grew quiet as darkness enveloped us, his gaze fixed on the river. Following his line of sight, I squinted, trying to make sense of the shadows dancing on the water. "Do you see that?" he asked, a note of uncertainty in his voice. We all looked, the mood shifting palpably. Nick, ever the protector, retrieved a flare gun from his backpack, aiming it towards the dark outline that had captured our attention. The flare arced through the night, briefly illuminating the riverbank and revealing a boat, and not just any boat, but one with two figures on board, their intentions unclear. The sudden intrusion of these strangers, coupled with Nick's reckless response, sparked a flurry of activity. Rocks were thrown, harsh words exchanged, but eventually the boat retreated, leaving us with a lingering sense of unease. Trying to shake off the incident, we returned to our revelry, determined not to let fear dampen our spirits. Yet, as I laid in my tent later that night, the excitement of the day warring with the adrenaline of our unexpected encounter, I couldn't help but feel a foreboding sense of what was to come. This was supposed to be a trip to celebrate our bond, our last carefree days before adulthood. Little did I know, it was the beginning of a nightmare none of us could have anticipated. The first light of dawn had barely touched the sky when I awoke to the distant sound of water gently colliding with the riverbank. The events of the previous night felt like a distant dream, blurred at the edges by sleep and the remnants of alcohol-induced haze. Yet, the unease that settled in my stomach was real, as palpable as the cold air that seeped into our tents. We emerged from our shelters, groggy and disoriented, only to discover the stark reality of our situation. Our supplies, meticulously packed and accounted for, had vanished without a trace. The coolers, once brimming with the promise of indulgence, were gone. Even the Ziploc bag, a token of our rebellion against the strictures of the world we were temporarily leaving behind, had disappeared. The theft was a violation, a stark reminder that the wilderness we had sought to embrace was not ours to claim. The initial shock gave way to a creeping dread as we realized we were not alone. Our isolation, once a coveted ally, had turned against us. The mysterious boat from the night before was no mere figment of our intoxicated minds. It was a harbinger of the danger that now lurked unseen among the trees. Determined not to let this setback derail our adventure, we decided to split up in search of the trail we had abandoned the day before. The logic was sound. More ground could be covered if we divided our efforts. Yet, as Dan and I ventured into the dense underbrush, each snap of a twig, each rustle of leaves, felt like the closing steps of an unseen predator. Our search was aimless, guided more by instinct than any real sense of direction. The dense canopy above seemed to mock our efforts, filtering the light into a kaleidoscope of shadows that danced just out of reach. It was in one such moment, caught between light and shadow, that Dan stopped dead in his tracks. "There," he whispered, his voice barely carrying over the sound of our breathing. "Do you see it?" I followed his gaze, my heart sinking as I discerned the outline of a figure standing motionless in the distance. Clad in a bright orange hoodie that seemed to glow amidst the green, the figure was an anomaly, a stark contrast to the natural palette of the forest. The tension was palpable, a tangible force that seemed to hold us in place, even as every instinct screamed for us to flee. We turned, our retreat as chaotic as it was swift, the underbrush clawing at our legs as if to slow our escape. The forest, a labyrinth of green, offered no sanctuary. only the illusion of safety that shattered with each crunch of foliage beneath our feet. When I fell, the forest floor greeted me with unforgiving hardness, a stark reminder of the brutality of nature. Pain shot through my wrist, a cruel souvenir of my attempt to escape the inevitable. Dan's face, etched with concern and fear, was the last thing I saw before I urged him to leave me behind, a desperate attempt to ensure at least one of us made it out alive. But we were not meant to part ways, not there, not under the watchful gaze of our pursuer. With a determination born of desperation, we pressed on, the pain in my wrist a constant reminder of the stakes. The clearing we stumbled upon was not a reprieve but a trap, the smoldering remains of a fire serving as a sinister welcome. We were not alone. The realization hit us with the force of a physical blow, the presence of others in the clearing confirming our worst fears. The hunters had funneled us here, their motives as obscure as the paths that had led us to this moment of reckoning. As we stood back to back, surrounded by the encroaching figures, the wilderness ceased to be a backdrop for our adventure and became the stage for our survival. In that moment, the Pacific Crest Trail was no longer a path to freedom, but a descent into a nightmare from which there was no waking. The clearing, bathed in the weak light of dawn, felt like the world holding its breath. The smoldering remains of a fire pit in the center served as a grim reminder of the night's horrors. Surrounded, with no obvious path to safety, the feeling of being hunted settled over us like a shroud. Dan's hand found mine, his grip firm, grounding. Yet when I looked into his eyes, I saw the reflection of my own fear. We were standing at the edge of a precipice. The unknown lay before us, shrouded in mist and menace. The men in orange hoodies, their faces obscured by camouflage masks, emerged from the trees like specters, silent harbingers of doom. Our group, once vibrant and full of life, was now a study in terror. Nick, with his usual bravado, seemed to shrink before the encircling hunters. Tessa clung to him, her eyes wide, searching for an escape where none existed. Sadie and Katie, the twins who had always shared an unbreakable bond, stood close, their faces mirroring the same stark terror. The decision to run was unspoken, a collective impulse driven by primal fear. We broke as a unit, scattering in different directions, a desperate attempt to evade our pursuers. The forest, once a place of beauty and tranquility, transformed into a maze of shadows and threats, each branch a potential snare, each shadow a hiding place for our hunters. The sound of a gunshot shattered the relative silence, a cruel punctuation to the chaos. Nick fell, the impact of the bullet sending him to the ground in a heap. The sight of him, motionless, was a gut punch, a visceral reminder of the stakes. Dan and I paused only for a moment, our survival instincts screaming for us to continue. We ran, lungs burning, legs pumping with adrenaline-fueled desperation. The forest blurred past, a kaleidoscope of green and brown, as we sought refuge, any kind of sanctuary. But salvation remained elusive, the hunter's presence a constant shadow at our backs. A second shot rang out, this time striking Dan. The force of the impact spun him around, a fine mist of blood painting the air. He fell, his body crumpling in a way that left no room for hope. My heart broke then, shattered by the realization that I was alone, truly alone in this nightmare. With no time to mourn, I pushed forward, driven by the instinct to survive. The clearing gave way to dense underbrush, the ground uneven beneath my feet. Every rustle of leaves, every snap of a twig was a potential threat, a possible end. Eventually, exhaustion and pain became too much, forcing me to stop. My breaths came in ragged gasps, each one a battle. The silence of the forest was oppressive, a weight on my chest that made it hard to think, hard to move. It was in this moment of utter despair that I heard it, a faint sound, the distant murmur of voices. Hope, fragile and fleeting, sparked within me. With the last reserves of my strength, I moved towards the sound, each step an act of defiance against the hunters who sought to end my story. The trail emerged suddenly, like a line drawn in the sand between the nightmare and the real world. I stumbled onto it, my relief so intense it was almost palpable. The bridge, the threshold between wilderness and civilization, was in sight, a beacon of hope in the darkness. Flagging down a car, I collapsed into the arms of strangers, my story pouring out in a torrent of words and tears. The police arrived, their questions a blur, as the reality of what had happened settled around me like a shroud. Tessa and I were the only ones left, the sole survivors of a trip that had promised so much and delivered only horror. The woods had claimed the rest, their laughter and dreams silenced by the cruelty of men who hunted for sport, not sustenance. As I sat in the back of an ambulance, watching the sun rise on a day I never thought I'd see, I knew that the wilderness would forever be a place of terror for me. The Pacific Crest Trail, once a symbol of adventure and freedom, was now a grave, a reminder of how quickly joy can turn to despair, how suddenly the light can be snuffed out by darkness. The sun dipped low, casting long shadows that stretched across the clearing like fingers, grasping at the remnants of the day. The forest, once a place of serene beauty, now felt like a mausoleum, silent except for the whisper of the wind through the trees. It was here, in this desolate place, that the final chapter of our journey unfolded, a journey that had begun with laughter and dreams, only to end in nightmare and tragedy. As Tessa and I sat in the back of the police cruiser, the officers' voices were a distant murmur, their questions punctuating the heavy silence that hung between us. My mind was a torrent of images and emotions, replaying the events that had led to this moment. The senseless violence, the loss of friends, the desperation of our escape. It all seemed like a horrific dream from which I couldn't awaken. The clearing where we had been trapped, where Dan and Nick had fallen, was now a crime scene, cordoned off with yellow tape that fluttered in the breeze. The authorities had found the gruesome spectacle left by our hunters, a macabre display of sadism that defied understanding. Sadie and Katie, the inseparable twins, were discovered in a manner so barbaric, so inhuman, that the mere thought of it sent shivers down my spine. Dan and Nick, their bodies lying at the foot of that horrific tableau, were silent witnesses to the cruelty that humans are capable of inflicting upon one another. I tried to speak, to give voice to the horror, but found that words were inadequate to describe the depth of our despair. Tessa, her face a mask of shock and grief, could only clutch at my hand, her silence a testament to the unspeakable nature of our ordeal. The officers were patient, their faces etched with a mix of sympathy and professional detachment. They asked us to recount our story, to provide details that might lead to the capture of those responsible. But what could I say? How could I articulate the fear, the loss, the sheer brutality of what we had witnessed? As the sun set, casting the world into twilight, the reality of our situation sank in. We were survivors, yes, but at what cost? Our friends, our innocence, our belief in the fundamental goodness of the world, all had been stripped away in those dark woods. The ride back to civilization was a blur of lights and shadows, the world outside the cruiser window a stark contrast to the darkness we had escaped. The bridge, once a symbol of our adventure, now felt like a gateway to a world we no longer belonged in. The aftermath of our ordeal was a whirlwind of police interviews, media attention, and the suffocating embrace of families who had come perilously close to losing us. But amidst the chaos, a profound sense of loss lingered, a void that could not be filled by comforting words or shared grief. As I lay in my own bed that night, the safety of familiar surroundings did little to ease the turmoil within. The forest, with its secrets and shadows, had imprinted itself upon my soul, a constant reminder of the fragility of life and the darkness that lurks just beyond the light. I vowed never to return to the Pacific Crest Trail, to leave behind the wilderness and its hidden dangers. But I knew, even as I made that promise to myself, that the memories of what had happened would never fade. They would haunt me, a ghostly echo of laughter and screams, forever intertwined in the story of a journey that had ended in despair. And so, as the final chapter of our adventure closed, I understood that some paths once taken, can never be untrodden. The scars we bore were not just physical, but emotional, etched deep into our being. A permanent reminder of our brush with death in the wilds of the Pacific Crest Trail.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
I've always considered myself kind of a dork, with short black hair that never seemed to sit right and braces that felt like they could pick up satellite signals. I wasn't exactly what you'd call cool, but believe it or not, I did play lacrosse. Okay, I wasn't the fastest or the most coordinated on the team, but what I lacked in agility, I made up for in brute strength. It was weird. For a kid my size, you wouldn't expect me to be strong, but somehow, I was. Every summer, I made the trip to Phoenix, Arizona, to visit my grandparents on my dad's side. It was a tradition, one that I secretly looked forward to, despite the heat that could fry an egg on the sidewalk. My grandparents were an odd pair. My grandpa stood tall at 6'6", a semi-muscular tower of a man with a penchant for jokes and teasing. He never took anything too seriously, which made every visit unpredictable and fun. My grandma, on the other hand, was tall for a woman, about 5'9", and rather skinny. She didn't joke much herself, but she always laughed at Grandpa's antics. They were different in many ways, but their love for each other and their family was evident. They also shared a love for the outdoors, often going on walks and hikes, which was something I admired, even if I didn't always share their enthusiasm. This summer was different, though. I was alone. My older brother Jayen, who was 6 years older than me, had always been my companion on these trips. But this year, he decided to stay back and work, saving money for his return to campus. I wasn't mad at him. I got it. It was a responsible decision, but I missed him. Jayen was more than just my brother. He was my best friend, the person I could always rely on and open up to. Our dog Lucy was part of the family too. She was a rescue. A beautiful mix that looked more like a large fox than any dog breed I could name. Even after becoming a registered veterinarian assistant, I couldn't quite place her breed. She had medium-sized pointy ears, a snout, and a devotion to her owners that reminded me of a German shepherd. But her fur was the bright orange of a fox, and her tail matched. The morning after I arrived at my grandparents, they announced we'd be hiking up Camelback Mountain. I wasn't thrilled. Like most teenagers, my idea of a good time was more about scrolling through YouTube in bed than sweating up a mountain. This was also the first year without JN by my side, which made the prospect even less appealing. But as I sat in the car with Grandma, staring out at the scorching Arizona sun and listening to Lucy's steady panting from the back seat, I couldn't help but feel a bit of excitement. There was something about being here, with my family and the vast open desert around us, that felt like an adventure waiting to happen. Little did I know, this trip would be more than I bargained for, and I'd soon find out that the world was much bigger and more mysterious than I had ever imagined. Dragging myself out of bed that morning felt like pulling teeth. The sun hadn't even properly said hello yet, and there I was, getting ready to hike up a mountain that looked like a camel's hump. Why couldn't we just have a normal summer activity, like swimming or, I don't know, an ice cream eating contest? Anything but hiking in what felt like the surface of the sun. Grandma seemed excited, though. She always did. "It's going to be a great day for a hike, Josh," she said, her eyes sparkling with that adventurous spirit I wished I could share. And then there was Lucy, wagging her tail, completely oblivious to my lack of enthusiasm. She loved these outings, probably more than anyone else. If it weren't for her, and the fact that I didn't want to let my grandparents down, I might have tried harder to get out of it. The drive to Camelback Mountain was quiet. I spent most of it staring out the window, watching the landscape shift from the urban sprawl of Phoenix to the rugged, raw beauty of the Arizona desert. The mountains stood tall against the blue sky, their silhouettes a stark reminder of how small we really were. It was beautiful, in a desolate sort of way. Once we arrived, I strapped on my backpack, making sure I had enough water to last me through what I was sure would be a grueling trek. Lucy, ever the eager one, was already pulling at her leash, ready to explore. I had to admit her excitement was infectious. Maybe this wouldn't be so bad after all. As we started up the trail, Grandma by my side and Lucy leading the charge, I began to feel a sense of peace. The early morning air was cool, a gentle reminder that the day hadn't yet reached its full scorching potential. The path was surrounded by a surprising amount of greenery. Cacti and arid-resistant trees formed a sort of desert oasis that I hadn't expected. Above us, the sky was a canvas of blue, vast and endless. We made idle talk as we walked, Grandma telling me stories of her younger days, when she and Grandpa would explore these trails, long before the city had crept so close. It was hard to imagine her as anything but my grandmother. Yet here she was, sharing tales of adventure and youth. It made me see her in a different light. But as we delved deeper into the trail, a nagging feeling started to grow in the pit of my stomach. I couldn't quite place it at first. Was it just the heat starting to get to me, or something else? I glanced at Lucy, and the way her ears perked up and her stance lowered sent a shiver down my spine. She sensed something. Animals have that instinct, a way of knowing when something's not quite right. And if Lucy was on edge, then maybe I should be too. The beauty of the trail, the cacti, and the blue skies suddenly felt overshadowed by a sense of dread. I tried to shake it off, telling myself it was just the unfamiliarity of the terrain, or maybe a story from Papa that was creeping back into my mind. But deep down I knew it was neither. Something was out here with us. Something that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I remembered Papa's words. If you ever feel like you're being stalked, don't run. Prey runs. I had no idea how soon I'd need to heed that advice. The further we hiked, the heavier the air felt, like it was thick with something more than just the heat. Lucy's behavior hadn't improved. If anything, she seemed more on edge, her body tense, and her steps cautious. Grandma, ever so focused on the trail ahead, didn't seem to notice. But I did. Every rustle in the bushes, every shadow that moved just beyond my line of sight, it all made my heart race faster. I tried to remember what Papa had told me about being in the jungle during the war, about the things he'd seen that he couldn't quite explain. I always thought they were just stories, meant to scare me into being cautious. But standing there, in the middle of the Arizona desert with something watching us, I wasn't so sure anymore. That's when I saw it. At first, I thought it was just a trick of the light, a shadow cast in a peculiar way. But as I focused, I realized it was looking back at me. Hidden partially behind a large cactus, there was something... someone? No, it couldn't be a person. It was too big, too dark, and the way it seemed to blend with the shadows was unnatural. Its eyes were the most terrifying part. They were like voids, black holes that seemed to suck in the light around them, except for a faint glint of yellow that made it clear it was staring right at me. I felt a chill run down my spine, my body instinctively knowing this creature was dangerous. I remembered Papa's words. "Don't run. Prey runs." My legs wanted to bolt, every instinct telling me to flee, but I forced myself to stand still. "Don't scream. Prey screams." My throat was tight, but I kept silent. And then the hardest advice to follow: don't meet its gaze. How do you not look at something that seems to hold your death in its eyes? But I had to protect Grandma and Lucy. I couldn't let my fear control me. I tried to make myself bigger, puffing out my chest and spreading my arms, hoping to appear more intimidating. It felt silly, a kid trying to scare off a monster from the stories, but what else could I do? "Grandma, we need to go back," I said, my voice steady despite the fear. "I don't feel good." She looked at me, concern etching her features. "Oh, honey, we can head back if you're not feeling up to it." As we turned around, I made sure to stay between the creature and my grandmother, walking backwards for a few steps before convincing myself it was safe to turn. Every sound seemed amplified, every shadow a potential hiding spot for the creature. But it didn't follow us, or if it did, it stayed out of sight. The walk back to the car was the longest journey of my life. I kept replaying the encounter in my head, trying to make sense of what I'd seen. Was it real? Had I imagined it? But the fear I felt, the way Lucy reacted, it was all too real. We reached the car without incident, and as we drove away, I couldn't help but look back, half expecting to see the creature following us. But there was nothing. Just the desert, the mountain, and the unanswered questions that would haunt me for a long time to come. The ride back home was a blur. My mind was a whirlwind of thoughts, trying to process what had just happened. Every now and then I'd catch Grandma glancing at me from the rearview mirror, a mix of concern and curiosity in her eyes. Lucy was quiet too, resting her head on my lap as if she could sense my unease. Once we got home, I excused myself and went straight to my room. I needed time to think, to be alone with my thoughts. I replayed the encounter over and over in my head, each time trying to convince myself that it had been just my imagination. But deep down, I knew it wasn't. The fear I felt was too real, too visceral to be made up. I remembered Papa's stories, the warnings he'd given me about creatures we couldn't understand. I always thought they were just tales from an old man who'd seen too much war. But now, I wasn't so sure. Had he been trying to prepare me for something like this? The thought sent shivers down my spine. 2 days later, Grandma mentioned something that made my blood run cold. She'd seen a news report about hikers going missing on the same trail we'd been on. My heart stopped. That could have been us. If we hadn't turned back when we did. I didn't even want to think about it. I was grateful to Grandma for listening to me that day, for trusting me enough to turn back. It was a small comfort, but it meant everything in that moment. I realized then how fragile life could be, how quickly things could change. The encounter changed me. I couldn't look at the world the same way anymore. There was so much out there that we didn't understand, so many mysteries hidden in the shadows. I found myself being more cautious, more aware of my surroundings. The adventurous spirit that had once driven me to explore seemed to have dimmed, replaced by a wariness that I couldn't shake. Papa's advice never left me. I carried it like a talisman, a reminder of the day I came face to face with the unknown. I even started carrying a serrated pocket knife he'd given me for my birthday. It was more symbolic than anything, but it gave me a sense of security, a feeling that I wasn't completely defenseless. I never went back to those mountains. The thought alone was enough to make my heart race. Instead, I found other ways to satisfy my curiosity, other paths to explore that felt safer, less threatening. But the memory of that day lingered, a shadow that followed me, reminding me of the world's hidden dangers. In the end, I learned to live with the fear, to accept it as part of my reality. It was a hard lesson, one that taught me respect for the natural world and its mysteries. I knew I couldn't let it control me, couldn't let it stop me from living my life. But I also knew I'd never forget the day I realized we weren't alone, that there were things out there beyond our understanding. And maybe, just maybe, that was okay.
With over 2,300 hotels across the U.S. and Canada, Best Western is perfect for our annual spring hiking trip. It feels a little like Okay, back to the hotel. What a great day. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. The key to solving any mystery? Smart decisions based on the facts. In the case of the weather's effect on your well-being, turn to the Weather Channel app. It clues you in on how weather shapes your mood, health, and productivity, with insights built on reliable forecast data to help you thrive. Because mystery belongs in true crime, not weather. Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
The moment our tires crunched onto the gravel path that led to our chosen campsite in the heart of Arkansas's wilderness, I felt the weight of the city life lift off my shoulders. James, my ever-adventurous boyfriend, was at the wheel, his eyes bright with the promise of a weekend away from it all. Lane, his childhood friend and our occasional guide into the wild, lounged in the back seat, his laughter mingling with the sound of the forest around us. "We're gonna have the best time," James declared as he parked our old SUV in a clearing that offered a picturesque view of the creek. The sun was beginning to dip low, casting long shadows that danced on the water's surface. It was perfect. Just us, the wilderness, and the kind of quiet you can't find in any city. We unloaded our gear with practiced ease, the routine of setting up camp as familiar to us as the back of our hands. The tent was up in no time, and soon, a fire crackled in the pit, its warm glow warding off the evening chill. Lane, the unofficial DJ of our group, picked out a playlist of groovy tunes that filled the air, blending seamlessly with the natural symphony of the creek and the rustling leaves. As darkness enveloped our little campsite, we settled around the fire, the flickering flames illuminating our faces. We shared stories, laughed, and enjoyed the simple pleasure of each other's company, our conversation punctuated by the occasional pop and hiss of the firewood. The creek murmured in the background, a constant, soothing presence. It was during one of these moments, as we relaxed into the night, that James's gaze drifted beyond the firelight. "You see that?" He nudged me, nodding towards a faint light in the distance. I squinted, making out what looked like another fire, far off through the trees. "Probably just some other campers," Lane chimed in, though we hadn't noticed anyone else when we arrived. The thought was momentarily unsettling. Had we been so absorbed in our own little world that we missed the signs of neighbors? Yet, as quickly as the curiosity came, it was dismissed. We were here to disconnect, after all, not to ponder over the presence of others. The night deepened, and with it our conversation drifted into silence. The fire had burned down to glowing embers, casting a soft, comforting light. The music had been turned down, now just a gentle backdrop to the sound of the night. It was the perfect end to a day in the wilderness, or so we thought. As we prepared to turn in for the night, I couldn't shake off a feeling of unease, as if the shadows held secrets we were not privy to. But looking over at James and Lane, their faces lit by the dying fire, I pushed those thoughts away. We were together, we were safe, and that was all that mattered. We crawled into our tent, the fabric walls a thin barrier between us and the vast, unknown dark. I drifted off to sleep with the comforting thought that tomorrow was another day of adventure, unaware of the turn our story was about to take. The night had deepened into an impenetrable black, the kind that seems to swallow sound and sight whole. I was jerked awake, not by a noise, but by an absence of it, the kind of silence that screams. My heart hammered against my ribs as I lay still, trying to discern the cause of my sudden wakefulness. Beside me, James was a silent, rigid form, his eyes wide in the dark. "What is it?" My whisper barely disturbed the air, yet James's hand found mine, his grip tight. "Listen," was all he said, and then I heard it, the subtle, unmistakable sound of movement outside our tent, the soft crunch of leaves and the occasional snap of a twig. My mind raced. Animal, human, something else. The wilderness doesn't scare me. It's what I can't see in it that does. We lay there frozen, as minutes stretched into what felt like hours. The crackling of the fire had long since died down, and the night seemed to press in on us with a palpable intensity. I could hear my own breathing, too loud in the oppressive silence, and James's steady, quiet inhales and exhales beside me. Then, abruptly, the silence was shattered by the sound of our car door handle being jiggled. Once, twice. The clear intention behind the action sent a chill down my spine. Someone, or something, was out there, and they were trying to get into our car. The whispering started then, a low murmur that was impossible to ignore. It was human, or so it seemed, but carried an otherworldly quality that made my skin crawl. The voices were too soft to make out words, but the intent felt malevolent, a discussion of plans that we were not meant to understand. James's grip on my hand tightened to the point of pain, a silent echo of the fear we both felt. The tent no longer felt like a refuge but a trap, too flimsy to offer any real protection. Lane was in his tent, a mere 15 feet away, but he might as well have been miles for all the help he could offer us. The voices continued, a sinister whispering that seemed to circle our campsite, drawing ever closer. I could feel James tense beside me, his body coiled like a spring, ready to act, to defend, but against what? Our unseen assailants remained just that. Unseen, their presence marked only by the eerie sound of their voices. Then, as suddenly as it had begun, the whispering stopped. The silence that followed was even more terrifying, a void that seemed to wait, expectant. I held my breath, listening for any sign of what was to come next, but nothing did. The night reclaimed its silence, leaving us with nothing but our fear and the pounding of our hearts. We didn't sleep after that, remaining alert and watchful until the first light of dawn began to seep through the fabric of our tent. The morning brought no answers, only more questions. The absence of any footprints or signs of our nocturnal visitors was as disturbing as the encounter itself. It was as if the night had conjured them from the ether, leaving us to wonder if what we had experienced was real or the product of our imagination. But the fear was real, as palpable as the weight of the gun I wished I had brought along. And as we packed up our camp in the cold light of morning, I knew one thing for certain. The wilderness had revealed a face to us that night that I never wanted to see again. The morning sun did little to dispel the chill that had settled over us since the night's unsettling events. With the light came the reality of our situation, stark against the backdrop of the serene wilderness that had been our haven just a day before. James, Lane, and I moved with a mechanical efficiency, our actions driven by the need to understand, to find some evidence that would make sense of the whispers and the fear. "We have to check around, see if they left anything behind," James said, his voice carrying a weight that matched the bags under his eyes. Lane nodded, his usual easygoing demeanor replaced by a taut alertness as we began to scour the area around our campsite. But there was nothing. The ground, covered in a layer of pine needles and leaves, betrayed no signs of intrusion. No footprints marred the earth, no disturbed vegetation pointed to a hasty retreat. It was as if the forest had conspired to erase any evidence of the night's visitors. "It's like they were never here," Lane muttered, echoing my thoughts. "But we knew they had been. The fear we'd felt, the whispers we'd heard, they were too real to dismiss as a collective hallucination. Our search led us to the spot where we had seen the distant fire the night before. But here, too, the forest offered no clues, no ashes, no remnants of a campfire. The ground was undisturbed, the silence unbroken. The voices, they sounded so close," I said, struggling to reconcile the lack of physical evidence with the intensity of what we had experienced. "But they talked about the car, and we heard them from here. How?" James shook his head, his brow furrowed in thought. "I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. And no tracks? Nothing? It's like they floated over the ground." The notion seemed absurd, yet in the absence of any logical explanation, the absurd began to take on the sheen of possibility. We had heard stories, of course, local legends of spirits and creatures that roamed these woods. Tales we had laughed off as the kind of folklore every secluded area seemed to have. Now, those stories wormed their way into our thoughts, offering explanations that defied logic, but fit the facts as we knew them. "We should get out of here," Lane said finally, voicing the decision we had all silently reached. The wilderness around us felt different now, its beauty marred by the knowledge of what lurked within it, unseen and unknown. Packing up our camp, we spoke little, each lost in our own thoughts. The drive back to civilization was somber, the landscapes that had thrilled us on the way in now passing by unnoticed. Our conversation from the night before seemed like a distant memory, overshadowed by the fear and the questions that now filled the car. As we left the wilderness behind, I couldn't help but look back, half expecting to see something watching us from the trees. But there was only the forest, silent and inscrutable, keeping its secrets. The experience had changed something in us, I realized. The wilderness had always been a place of escape, a sanctuary from the world's noise. Now, it was a reminder of how thin the veil was between the known and the unknown, and how easily that veil could be torn aside. We had sought an adventure, a break from the predictability of our lives. We had found it, not in the beauty of the natural world, but in the shadows that lay just beyond the reach of our campfire light. And as we returned to the familiar streets of our town, the echoes of those whispers followed us, a haunting reminder of what lay hidden in the heart of the wilderness. The road unwound before us, a ribbon of asphalt slicing through the landscape, leading us away from the wilderness and back into the embrace of civilization. The familiar sights of town life gradually came into view, but they seemed somehow less real, less substantial than they had before our trip. We had left seeking an escape from the mundane, a taste of the wild unknown, but we returned with a deeper, more unsettling knowledge. The silence in the car was a heavy thing, filled with the echoes of our experiences. James drove with a focused intensity, his usual easy banter gone. Lane, too, was quiet, staring out the window at the passing scenery with a distant look in his eyes. I found myself caught between a longing for the comfort of home and a strange reluctance to re-enter a world that now seemed slightly askew, tainted by the shadow of our night in the woods. As we neared home, the conversation turned hesitantly to what had happened. We spoke in low tones, as if afraid that raising our voices would somehow make it all more real. The lack of evidence, the impossibility of what we had heard and felt, left us grappling for understanding. "It's like the more we talk about it, the less sense it makes," Lane said, breaking a long silence. His words hung in the air, an acknowledgement of the surreal quality of our experience. James nodded, his eyes never leaving the road. "I keep thinking about those voices, the way they seem to come from nowhere, and everywhere at the same time. It's hard to shake off." I listened to them, feeling the weight of my own thoughts. The fear had receded, leaving in its wake a profound sense of vulnerability, a realization of how little we truly understand about the world around us. The wilderness had always been a place of beauty and peace for me, a sanctuary from the complexities of human life. Now, It felt like a vast, unknowable entity, indifferent to our presence and capable of hiding secrets beyond our comprehension. The drive home had given me time to reflect on the thin veil between the known and the unknown, and how easily it can be pierced. Our encounter in the woods was a stark reminder of the mysteries that lurk just beyond the edge of our understanding, hidden in the shadows and whispers of the night. As we unpacked the car, the familiar sights and sounds of our neighborhood wrapped around me like a comforting blanket. Yet, beneath the comfort, a question lingered. What else was out there, unseen, unheard, moving in the depths of the unknown? Our adventure had ended, but the echoes of that night would stay with us, a haunting reminder of our brush with the inexplicable. In the days that followed, I found myself looking at the world with new eyes, aware of the thinness of the barrier that separates the ordinary from the extraordinary. The wilderness had changed us, not just by instilling fear, but by opening our minds to the vastness of the unknown. It was a lesson in humility, a reminder that, for all our advancements in understanding, there are still things beyond our grasp, whispers in the dark that defy explanation. As I settled back into the rhythms of daily life, the memories of that night in the Arkansas woods remained, a shadowy presence at the edge of my thoughts. We had sought an escape from the ordinary, and we had found it, not in the way we expected, but in a way that would forever alter our perception of the world. The wilderness had revealed its other face to us, not just as a place of beauty and solitude, but as a realm where the mysteries of the universe whispered just beyond the firelight.